I know where he's going.
Could it potentially be one of the teams?
I'm not talking about it. Could it potentially be? I know where he's going.
The team where
hit me on Twitter, I'll tell you. I can't talk about it here, but hit me on Twitter, maybe I'll tell you.
You are now listening to The Waggle, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right. It is the Waggle Podcast, a playoff edition of the Waggle Podcast. Finally, the playoffs are here. We got an East preview for you, brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips. Because fans, this podcast each and every week is brought to you by Sport Clips, known for their sports clips, MVP haircut experience, massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, sports on TV like football, hockey, basketball, baseball, but you really care about the football. Oh, and you care about the legendary haircuts. You can now book your appointment online at sportclips.ca. Six teams have booked their appointment to the postseason. We will talk about two of them. We're going to break down the East right now. So listen, our fans in the West, we're going to talk about the West playoffs coming up. But stick around if you care about what's going down in the East. And listen, we have love for the West Coast. One of the teams playing in the East because of the crossover is a Western team. That would be the Edmonton Eskimos. Davis, we are finally here. We're finally at some playoff football where the games matter. And once again, we have a crossover.
They call it bright lights time, DJ, when the games matter. It's all about the bright lights. The Edmonton Eskimos, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the Montreal Alouettes, Calgary Stampeders, Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. They're in the tourney. They get a chance to play under the bright lights.
Was there a different attention to detail, a little energy, pep and step, walkthroughs, week of a postseason game? Because for a lot of teams, the last week, I mean, some 2 weeks, it's just been dress rehearsals to get to the postseason and hope to get healthy, because some of the standings have been, in the East specifically, known.
I could think of walkthroughs. Remember, a lot of practice, probably 50% of the reps you see, route combinations, if you're on defense or if you're a defensive lineman, you're looking at gaps and run fits. And a lot of that stuff, when it goes on during the walkthroughs on a regular week, it's walkthrough tempo. You're listening, you're seeing, and you're also maybe, you know, joking with your teammates. It's a very casual environment during those walkthroughs. And now turn the page to bright lights time, playoff time, where we are now. And every rep is a discussion. Okay, when you see this, how do you want to play this? Okay, I'm gonna do this. Okay, let's see it this way. You really get into the fine details on a Tuesday morning, on a Monday morning. Monday afternoon, you're getting into the details of specifics on how things are done, whereas on a regular week, you might not get into that till a Thursday. You might spend one day, these are some of the things that are different in a playoff week. You might spend one extra day after practice on a game week, or 2 days after practice with just your group without the coaches, talking about things that you guys see, watching extra film with the whole unit. You know, someone brings a chicken or bring the donuts, and you watch. Well, playoff week, it's every day you come in extra after. Of course, you have your meetings with your team and your coaches after, and then you stay. Hey, let's watch the, you know, if you're Montreal and you're Bola Combo, Seante Evans, you say, hey, let's watch the Edmonton game from week one. After practice, guys, let's meet at 5:30 and watch this practice. Let's come in at 6:30 a.m. and watch game two versus Edmonton. And just the extra preparation that goes on is in a playoff week.
In your career, refresh my memory, whether it was, you know, Calgary, BC, did you ever have to cross over in the playoffs?
Never have crossed over, no.
So you were always one of the top seeds.
Never have crossed over. In Montreal.
Fourth place, Dave Sanchez? Nah.
Nah. We played Montreal, we played two crossover, and we played in 09, we played, I think BC crossed over, and in 2008, Edmonton crossed over. to Montreal. So two West teams crossed over back-to-back years. The back-to-back Grey Cup years in grade in 2008 and 2009 when I was in Montreal, a West team crossed over and we absolutely blew them out both times. And no, I'm just, that's just, you know, to the, it's hard, you know, it's hard to cross over. And those are.
Well, that was my next question. Yeah. Why is it so hard?
That's a good question. And if you look historically, traditionally, not even, I mean, it goes back, it's modern and it goes back to, you know, 20 or 15 years, whenever the crossover started. The West has been stronger, the stronger division since the inception of the crossover. And yet still every year we say it, maybe it's better to cross over. This year I wouldn't say that, but every other year, maybe it's better to cross over if you're the fourth place team in the West. Maybe it's better to cross over. Maybe you have a better opportunity to get through. And every year they come in and get blown out by the Eastern semifinal team. Not every year they get blown out, but every year they lose, and a lot of the times they get blown out. We know how hard it is to travel. That's one thing. I mean, The BC teams that go to BC often struggle, the Eastern teams, and vice versa. When BC or Calgary, even in Montreal, heading all the way across, have a tough time. So there's got to be something to that.
But I see East teams going to BC struggling because you're playing at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's that aspect. But for West teams coming East, you're playing on the weekend at 1 Eastern. That's something that you would have done 2, 3, 4 times throughout the regular season. So that's not that new. Is there, if you had to place some reasoning in terms of why East teams struggled, how much of it is it's tough to cross over with the travel? And how much of it is the teams aren't that good? Like, you're fourth in the West for a reason, so chances are that the second best team in the East may be as good, if not better, than you on their home field.
But have they been, though? I think your last point, so you raise a good question. The answer right away would be no. I don't think they've been better. Let's just look at the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. The fourth place team in the West is usually, if I look on paper, they're a better team than the second place team in the East over the last 5 years. But I think the next part is, what was the next part of your question you said?
Or is it just the travel and yeah, playing someone
right
at home?
Right. So I think that would be that, I think that part you're spot on. It's the travel, it's playing at home, and it's being the confines of your own park and your building. And I don't think it's the travel as much as, you know, for one game you're going to be rested. Teams will come in extra early for the playoffs too. Instead of coming in one day, you'll come in 2 days to get acclimated to the time and the weather, whatever it may be. So the aspect would be the confines of your own stadium, locker, field, and crowd, I think would be the biggest factors.
Here's the next question that I have.
How many questions do you have?
Last game? That's what I
did. Let me ask you a question.
Do you have one?
No.
I didn't think so. I'm not going to ask you to predict the matchup, because I'm just not. I just don't really feel like throwing you under the bus and having your mentions full by former players. Oh, really?
Bitterly
we see you, David Sanchez. Right. But I will ask you this, though. Who has a better chance of beating Hamilton of these two teams? Not who's going to win, but who, if they win, has a better chance? Because I think most people feel Hamilton is far and away favorite to make the Grey Cup. If you look at where the Leo Vegas odds have been trending, who has a better chance of going into Hamilton and doing what no team has done this year, win in the donut box, Tim Hortons Field?
That's a very good question. And I agree. Hamilton, it's going to be tough to beat Hamilton. And Leo Vegas odds are spot on by having Hamilton as a heavy favorite. Montreal has the best chance of beating the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Top to bottom, when I look at the two rosters, Montreal and Edmonton, talent-wise, playoff experience, Edmonton. A quarterback that's been there and done that, just was the Grey Cup quarterback last year, was on pace to be, if he wasn't hurt, he would, you know, you might argue this, some might argue this, but the reality is, Trevor Harris didn't get hurt, he might be on pace, he might have been the most outstanding player in the West, maybe in the league. He was on pace early on with his numbers, okay? The roster they have of guys, I bet if you go through that roster and look at guys who have won Grey Cups, played in playoff games on that Edmonton Eskimo team, they're going to outnumber Montreal. That being said, why do I think Montreal would have a better chance to beat Hamilton if they happen to get through and play in the East Final? Number eight, Vernon Adams. Vernon Adams, with his skill set, is good enough and talented enough by himself to beat any team in the league. When I say by himself, I mean the extra special plays he makes. Everyone's got to play good on that team. But if he can make special plays and carry a team with his skill set, that's why he's the biggest X factor in the whole playoffs. He could also lose the game by himself with poor decisions, turning the ball over. So that's the reason. VA is a special talent, and if he has a good day, he could beat. They'll beat Edmonton, and he could go in. And he could beat Hamilton. If VA doesn't have a good day, they have no chance. On the other end, Trevor could have an average day in either game, and depending on what his team does, they may win or lose.
Yeah, we've seen Trevor had big games and they've lost.
How about you? Who do you think has a better shot? If you don't want to say who do you think is going to win the East Semi at this point, it's early in the week. If you do, go fire at it. If not, back the question you asked me, who would have a better chance to beat Hamilton?
I mean, I'm going to put on wax. I think Hamilton's going to win the East. I think that the team that has the best chance to beat them would be Montreal. I agree the reasoning is VA, but my reasoning why VA is different is the belief. He gives them a bit of swag, a bit of belief, and the ability to come back from 14 down, from 21 down, from they've come back from more before, come back early, come back late. They're like the Grim Reaper. Like, you can get up on them early and you can never really feel comfortable because of the belief that he has and the belief that they get from him as a team, and specifically as an offense, that they can come back from any deficit and make some special plays to get back in the ball game. And Edmonton has some Grey Cup pedigree on their team because it was not that long ago that they won it. And also they've imported some with the Red Blacks that have come through. And when you look at Montreal, I mean, they've been out of the playoffs for a while. John Bowman is the only guy who's really won stuff there with that team. But they have slowly infused some experience from some former Stampeders who will be able to lead that locker room and bring some playoff experience. So I think Montreal would be the team. We talk about quarterbacks at this time of year specifically because you go as your QB goes often. And so let's actually really dial in and break down that matchup. Let's do it with a little Swoop Airlines aerial report. And look at the cues. And so we got Trevor Harris for Edmonton, and you mentioned it. My guy was on a record-setting pace. He only played 13 games. 13! Missed 5. Yet he finished second in the league in passing yards with 4,027. Nobody this year threw for 5,000 or threw for 20 TDs. He would have if he was healthy, as he had 16 TDs to just 6 interceptions and 4,027 yards passing with an efficiency rate of 102.9 and an interception percentage, which is 1.3. He was balling. But the problem is, even when he was balling, they were a 500 team. And when he left, he was a 500 team. So maybe he would have been in the running for most outstanding, but it's tough to make an argument that he was the most valuable. I actually think if the award was just most valuable, it might be Vernon Adams Jr. because that offense completely changed when they went from Pipkin to VA due to injury, and then he just never gave that job back. And even when he was hurt later, it was always going to be his job. He was only hurt briefly, so that's why he was able to start 16 games And the numbers aren't as eye-popping as Harris's are. Completed 65.7% of his balls, threw for 3,942 yards, 24 TDs, 13 INTs. And the INTs at times came in bunches, 3% interception ratio. But also a big part of what he does is just avoiding sacks, keeping them on schedule with his ability to move in the pocket, and tucking it down and running and helping that run game, whether it's tying down the back end so that stand back can get busy or just pulling it and running himself. He's like another running back in the backfield, and he gave you a bunch of yards running the football.
How much does he have to run?
Well, he averaged 4.8 a carry.
How many touches? How many runs? How many rushes a game? And this will be the similar question when we look at the West for when Strebler's in the game and how he comes in the game. But how many rushes in a playoff game do you think? Because does he have to rush? Does Vernon have to rush the ball more in the playoffs? Because you don't want to wear your quarterback down in the regular season by having him rush. But it's such a dynamic weapon. He's such a dynamic weapon. Does he need to carry the ball more in the playoffs? How many rushes would you think would be optimal for VA?
The more the better. Yeah, like I double agree. Digits for me. And what are we saving for?
Right.
We're not saving his body for next week. Next week's not promised. So I said he threw 24 TD passes. Take a wild guess how many rushing TDs he had this year. Take a wild guess.
VA?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Just pick a number, any number.
Rushing touchdowns right now. 10?
12. Almost half as many rushing TDs as he did passing TDs. That's a big part of their offense and the way they get points.
Well,
and
some I have of that, to see some what that is sneaks. Yeah.
Some of that is short yardage, right? Some of that is just
James Franklin broke the single season record last year for touchdowns in a season. I think it was last year or the year before.
But and, some of that is also sneaks. Some of that's pulling
yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
down.
Yeah, yeah.
And making people miss. So I think he needs to run it.
He had one against Calgary this year where it was Corey Greenwood in Calgary that he gave him that. Can you make that noise again?
Erks.
And then breaks into the end zone. Touchdown. That was nice.
Streetcar coming to a halt. And styles make fights. And stylistically, these quarterbacks.
Did you say styles make fights?
They do, yeah.
Styles?
It's a boxing term.
Styles make fights.
Yeah. So, look, if you have a southpaw going up against, like, if you have a southpaw that's a jabber going up against a right-handed guy who's, you know, giving you combinations but looking for the knockout early, like, the different styles make it a good fight. Or if you just have two guys who are conservative, it's a boring fight, even though they may be great fighters.
I did my first kickboxing class last night.
How'd you like it?
It was good. It's funny. Last night was the first one I did.
I like kickboxing is just a great workout, really works the abs.
Yeah.
But like, I don't really want to be kicking people. I'd rather just box. Like, I'm just not really trying to like. Oh, and I don't want to be kicked either. Like, yeah, keep your feet away from my face. So,
well, DJ, for those that don't know you, similar to me, you're vertically challenged.
Yeah.
So people's feet might be near your head. You don't have to be that limber to kick you in the head.
You know what's the worst in kickboxing? It's like you fake, like you're going to punch someone in the face, and then you just kick them right in the shins. That is the worst. Because if you know this, like you've probably had this a bunch. You know, running back gets tripped up and falls right into your shins, or offensive lineman cuts you right into the shins. No padding. Just bone on bone. It's painful. It's painful. Anyways, styles make fights, and stylistically, like a great kickboxing match, these quarterbacks could not be more different in how they get it done. So it'll be very fun to watch them go head to head. So we talked Vernon Adams. Trevor Harris is back. Does he look healthy to you?
He looked pretty good last week, or at least he looked sharp. And I was an advocate for him sitting out because I don't think that – because he's played in some big games, and it's more important to have him healthy right now than and worry about him being sharp. He's either going to be good or he's not going to be good. So, yeah, he looked – I have a lot of faith in that offense overall because they have great weapons. If you look across the board, their receiving core, you look at, you know, along with Hamilton's – receiving core, they're probably From experience and talent wise, they're right up there at the top. And with Trevor, and I think Jason Moss is a good play caller. So that's a good team offensively, and they're going to be a challenge. And Trevor, the one thing you always hear about playing against Trevor Harris and what defenses want to do, take away the first read. Trevor Harris wants to get the ball out of his hands. He's not near. We talked about the mobility of Vernon Adams. Obviously, Trevor's nowhere near as mobile, although he did take ballet classes with his mom in the offseason, so he is a little he's a little more nimble in the pocket, but he wants to get the ball out, and he doesn't have a super strong arm, but he's pretty accurate, so he wants to get the ball out. He wants to get it out quickly, and he has a pretty good command of the offense. So that will be the challenge for Montreal, not to let guys run free, to be solid in their communication on the back end, and because Edmonton will have stuff that they'll look to scheme up, and Trevor, because he has more experience than VA, if he catches some reads pre-snap and he finds a bust or a mismatch, he's probably going to find it.
I'm interested to see that chess match in the Alouettes secondary is a veteran group. We're going to have Matthew Prue on the program.
And Matthew!
He can break down kind of how he would game plan scheme for both quarterbacks. But first, before that, word from our friends at Athabasca University. Whether you're a long snapper, a ball hawk, or a field general or more, you have an important role to play in life, and Athabasca University has a place for you on their team. Take the National Grey Cup Sweepstakes Pop Quiz to find out your player persona. Be entered to win the grand prize of a flight 4-2 to Calgary with hotel accommodations for 3 nights from Friday, November 22nd to Sunday, November 24th, and 2 tickets to the Grey Cup on November 24th. Did you know that Athabasca University is the CFL's official education partner? AU serves 40,000 learners from coast to coast and believes everyone should have access to university-level education. Quite frankly, can have an impact on your life. Whether you're a player, a coach, or a fan, we're all learners, including us, including me and Davis. So consider life beyond the game with Athabasca University. Visit cfl.ca/AU pop quiz. That's cfl.ca/AU pop quiz to find out who your player persona is and be entered to win a trip to the Grey Cup. Before we bring on Mr. Prue, you know who's not going to the Grey Cup?
Who?
The Ottawa Redblacks. I mean, they'll be there. They'll be hanging out, but they won't be playing. Rick Campbell might be there handing out resumes. He'll be handing out business cards.
Not going to need to. I've already got them locked in somewhere, but I can't talk about it right now because it's playoff time, and let's stick to the games. We don't want to focus off the games, but as soon as it's over, I know where he's going.
Could it potentially be one of the teams?
I'm not talking about it.
Could potentially be.
I know where he's going.
The team where
hit me on Twitter. I'll tell you. I can't talk about it here, but hit me on Twitter. Maybe
potentially
I'll tell
the team
you.
Where I don't know his father, Hugh Campbell, laid a legacy, and he grew up in the city.
Whoa! And, that's tampering. That's the team that's in the playoffs right now.
The former assistant GM of the team that he was coaching.
It might be another place
moved
to
Edmonton, and I don't know. Like half their offense moved from Ottawa to Edmonton. Is it that place?
Let's move on. It's playoff time.
All right. Before we move on and talk to Mathieu, were you surprised to hear the comments coming out of Ottawa, of Rick Campbell saying, I just didn't think the status quo was going to be the best thing for the Red Blacks going forward? He then, in his press availability, which it's not often when you're leaving, you guys have a press conference to talk about it. I'm so ingrained in this community now and live here. So to give all that up, there had to be some pretty solid reasons. Were you surprised to hear him? Like, we talk about keeping it 90. He kept it close to 100.
That's my round of applause, Rick Campbell, for keeping it 100. The way he's handled, and I told him this when I talked to him, but the way he's handled everything that's happened this year, He handles it with class. You never see him waver and panic or subtly lack accountability. Like, you know, coaches, their words, they're accountable with their words, but the subtleties that they throw in with those words are passing the buck. You know, you see it all the time. I'm the coach. I'll take blame for this. But we can't turn the ball over. We can't get beat. Our quarterback's got to get blocked. Guys got to do their job. But I'll take it because I'm the coach. Like, that's not really taking it. And Rick, you know, time and time again, he never said, hey, we don't have enough talent in this room. We're not good enough. We lost a lot of players. He never said that. At one time, Rick said, and it's true, he could have easily said, we don't have enough talent right now. And that wouldn't have been a lie, and everyone would have probably not batted an eyelash. Never said it. In fact, halfway through the season, one of the quotes he said, which I thought was amazing, someone asked about, named all the guys that he had missed, that he lost. Greg Ellingson, Sir Vincent Rogers, and William Powell, and Trevor Harris, and so on and so on. Rico Murray. And he said, and he could have said, this would make him look better as a coach. He could have said, yeah, when you lose that many quality players, all stars, it's tough, but we'll fight through it. Something like that, where he could have acknowledged it and said, you know what he said? I don't want to talk about the guys we don't have. Let's talk about the guys we do have right now and how we're going to get it done. So not shedding light to the GM and who they lost.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to talk about the guys in the room and how I got to coach them better to win. I respect the heck out of that. And how he's handled everything. And this decision, or what he's done right here, basically saying that I don't like the way it is, status quo, I can't work with it. He didn't say anything bad about the GM, didn't say anything bad about, he just said that the way it wasn't working, and I'd rather not be here. So he's willing to give up his job because he didn't like the way it was, but he didn't throw any shade on the way out. I respect the heck out of Rick Campbell, and I had the honor to be around his dad for a short period of time when I was in Edmonton, and I had some he's actually the one that when I signed with Edmonton, I did the negotiations with him, although he wasn't the GM, but he was the president, and I believe the president was his title at the time. He was the boss man about that, and I had the chance to talk to him and kind of was... You know, he's the one that was paramount in getting me there. And the point being with Hugh is that you talk to anyone, he's a man of great integrity. Everyone respects him. So it's not all that surprising that his son has handled everything with such grace. And watching his press conference this week, it was emotional for him, obviously. And he just, you know, you can say all the right things when they're all truths, you know. Like, I watched the presser. I'm like, he's saying all the right things, but then I'm watching the presser, and he's not. The reason he's saying all the right things because he means it all. That's how he feels. And that's how it is, which is it's refreshing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you don't lie, you don't have to remember what you said.
Yeah.
You just keep it real. Yeah. I found actually more interesting that Marcel Desjardins was pretty honest in saying he did not think our relationship was good enough for him to want to continue in the arrangement, which is his opinion. I mean, the relationship has been the same since day one. Basically, he's saying, yeah, he wanted to break up with me, is what he's saying.
Right, which is honest too, which is great. And he didn't, and on the other hand, Marcel didn't throw Rick under the bus either. He just said, to your point, he did say that. He said he wanted thought it could still work and wanted it to work. And Rick decided not. So, which you got to respect that too.
The thing is, when you're a coach, the wins and losses, they go on your name. That's your record. And he was there for 6 years, went to the Grey Cup, three of them, won one. First year, to be expected, losing record. But this year, the last year, worst record in the league. If I'm Rick Campbell, I'm looking around thinking, I have bottom of the league talent, so I'm going to have bottom of the league production. I'm not bringing in the talent. The GM is. So I either need to have trust that the gym's going to get me some better talent, or I need to get me somewhere where the gym's going to get me some better talent. And so to me, this is what it was like. I no longer have faith in you to give me A, a staff, and B, too deep that I can win with. And so before I have another losing record and it gets on my name, I need to get out so people still remember the Grey Cup win and the trips to the Grey Cup and the East titles.
He was leaving. He was trying to get out before it got worse.
Yeah.
I just think that he – I honestly feel like – I feel like Rick has – feels like his time – it wasn't – he didn't want to work with Marcel anymore, whether that be the relationship that they had. He just felt toxic to him, or he didn't enjoy the interaction, which is totally fine. Like you've worked places probably, DJ. You're probably working somewhere right now with me where you just don't like to be around, but you just do it because you enjoy it. Not enjoy it, take that back. You do it because that's the job. I shouldn't say that. Me and you're wonderful. We actually hug and embrace every time we see each other on the mornings, the weekly time that we do our podcast. You're always so happy to see me.
I am.
As you should see the look on his face, he's so happy. You know, people, you have jobs and you have situations where it might be a good job and it might be something you like doing, but maybe you don't like some of the energy that you feel when you're there. And so if you have the opportunity and the leverage and
the privilege
to move, you know, to move on, then maybe not privileged, but if you want to move on, then you can do so. And he's chose to do that, and good for him.
But he's not going to be working in the hardware aisle at Rona next week.
He's going to be a head coach.
He knows.
Yes.
He can do that because he knows that.
He's locked in somewhere, for sure.
Atlantic Schooners, stand up.
Yeah, the Atlantic Schooners aren't going to be here this year, brother.
Well, I can't wait to see the musical chairs of the coaches. It's my favorite reality show every offseason. And Rick Campbell has just thrown his name and his resume in the hat. We will be talking about some coach situations in the West preview, so stick around for that, the next episode. But next on this episode, we talk to one of Davis's favorite teammates, Matthew Prue. And now on the podcast, one of Davis's favorite teammates. It's an Alouette takeover, evidently.
Here's the intro I always give, and pretty much depends. If I've had more than three drinks, I always start with this. And I don't know why. I've done it a few times, and I've noticed a trend that every time I drink, I do this. And when I'm with Matt, who is one of my best friends in football for sure in life, I love my guy, but I always introduce him as, you know, that Matt Prue emceed my wedding. For some reason, I don't know why, but I notice if I drink, I tell everyone that. But you know what that is? That's probably an indictment of the fact that I'm proud you're my brother. So maybe that's what it is.
But, good. That's good. That's good. I did empty your wedding. That was a blast. Can we do it again? Can we do like a repeat?
Well, you know what? You know, the good thing for you is there's a chance, Matt. there's always a chance. No, just joking. Shout out to my wife who is working on our second child.
Yeah, there you go.
Matthew Prue from RDS, NFL, he does college, does CFL, he does everything at RDS in Montreal, former Grey Cup champion and Montreal Alouette, and thanks for joining us, bud.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Happy that these playoffs are around the corner, because this last stretch of the season was a bit long, I feel.
Yeah, especially in the East, where we knew what the playoff matchups were going to be for what felt like a month. And now that we have the matchup, Edmonton, Montreal. We were talking about it earlier on the podcast. It's stylistically a nice matchup between two very good quarterbacks who do things in total different ways. As a former defender, how would you be preparing and scheming for both guys?
Well, first off, when you talk about Vernon Adams, the main part is containing him in the pocket, obviously, because his big asset is he's able to improvise and buy time with his feet. So you really want to keep him in the pocket. So I'd have a controlled rush And I do pretty much the opposite with Trevor Harris. I try to blitz him and just try to hit him as soon as I can in the game and try to get to him as soon as possible, because through time, and he's a very, very good quarterback. I feel like he's one of the elite quarterbacks in this league for the past, what, 4 or 5 years now. But he's shown to maybe not be as quite as effective when you hit him early. So I would try to blitz, try to bother him early in the game, and try to take away his first read. Because if he gets to get to that first read every time, it's going to be a long game. He's going to complete a lot of passes, and he's going to drive the field. And he can do it with 10, 12 play drives, where as to Vernon, he'll do like a 3 or 4 play drive with 1 65-yarder. So they're completely different, and I would approach the game differently if I was a defender.
One of the matchups I'll be looking at closely, and we'll look at some more tape in the next few days here, is the matchup between what I think is one of the best receiving corps in the league depth-wise in the Edmonton Eskimos against a Montreal secondary that I still don't know what to take from these guys or what to think. They play good at times. They look young and inexperienced at times. First of all, Matt, health-wise, Tommy Campbell wasn't there last week. What's the overall health looking like in the secondary entering this game, and your thoughts on them?
They're healthy and they're ready to go. So Tommy Campbell's going to be back at his spot in the weak side corner. He's been banged up for a part of the season, so they kind of put him on the bench just to rest him before the playoffs. He was one of the guys where, you know, he's been there before. He can find his rhythm pretty quickly. He's been to, what, 3 Grey Cups? He's a vet, so they could allow him to rest for a few weeks. So that's what they did. He'll be back at his spot in the weak side corner. Greg Reed, who's been a force, who's been one of the nice surprises here in Montreal, I feel, a little pit bull, is going to be the weak side halfback. Bo Lacombo, who's been a nice surprise too in replacement of Taylor Loeffler. When Taylor Loeffler went down early in the season, we all thought it was a big bang to this team. But fortunately for Montreal, Lacombo fit in pretty well, and he's got that physical presence in the middle, and he's feeling more and more comfortable. He's a guy who played in the box for most of his career, and now being further from the box, you can see he sees the game, and it kind of slowed down for him because he's got more time to react. So he's playing pretty well back there at the safety position. And the main guy who's back is Keontae Evans, who missed 6 games, or I think it was a bit more than that, but broke his hand in practice. He came back last week, so he's going to be at his field side spot for this game. He's obviously one of the good defensive backs in this league. And then you got Carter on the field side corner. So it's basically the secondary that this team wanted, besides Taylor Loeffler at the safety position, but you got a good guy backing up there. The thing is with this secondary, and I would say this, when you go man to man, I think they can compete with a lot of receiving groups. The problem is when they play zone and you don't get that 4-man pressure, you don't get pressure on the quarterback, it's kind of a soft zone. It's not very aggressive. It's not a match concept like you see some teams play where they're kind of aggressive on their coverage. They kind of spot drop more than they receiver drop, which makes it easy for good quarterbacks and veteran quarterbacks like Trevor Harris to complete passes. And that's what's been the problem for this team all season long. When you look at the completion percentage that they've allowed, I think they're last in the league with close to 74%. And I really attribute that to the lack of pressure of the front four and a soft zone coverage. So that's why I'm saying you got to take away the first read and you got to be very aggressive with Trevor Harris, because if he has like that 3 to 3.5 seconds to read and just release, you're done. He's gonna chop you up in pieces. So you really got to get into his head and mix things up and try to hit him early in the game.
Pass rushers, it's you know they go in. It's in conjunction, the defensive backfield and the front four. They work together. Who in that front four can get to the quarterback? We know there's a Hall of Famer in John Bowman, but that can't be, your number one rush threat, a guy in his mid-30s. Is, you know, who can get to the quarterback that we don't know, and who do you think is the maybe a key to this game, who can get there without a guy who can beat one-on-one and get there without blitzing?
Yeah, unfortunately, John Bowman is the guy. And I say unfortunately because I obviously, you know, Chase, we play with Bowman, and I have a ton of respect for him. But like you said, John, at this point of his career, can't be your main guy, but he is, unfortunately, Montreal. They haven't been able to find these young guys like some teams seem to find every year. Look at Calgary with Kasher and all these guys. And some teams just seem to have a knack to finding these defensive ends. And for the past 4 or 5 years, Montreal's lacked that guy. We thought we had him with Jamal Westerman a few years back, but he was traded to get Johnny Manziel. And there's really no one that stepped up. Antonio Simmons has been a nice surprise this season, but I would say he's a dominant forward that can really, on a play by, like, every play, beat his guy. He's the guy who's going to have to step up, though. Yeah, I mean, opposite to Bowman, he's going to be have to be the guy that steps up. And we've seen the guy, Javon Roland-Jones, who's played maybe the 3-4 pass games, who showed some few spurts of explosion and being able to attack the quarterback. So he's the guy who's going to be in the mix during the playoffs. And he's a young guy, but he's going to have to step up as well. So I see these two guys, Simmons and Roland-Jones, having to play a major role in this game. But your best guy still to apply pressure, just because of his knowledge, the fact he's now a technician, that he knows the game and he knows the guy he's going against, is John Bowman. So he rested for a few weeks. Hopefully he's rested enough. And you know what? I was really surprised by his speed this year. Usually that's one of the first things that goes away when you get older. But he's slimmed down and he's actually pretty fast for an old guy. So it's one of the keys. It's probably one of the main weaknesses of this team. Hopefully for Montreal, it doesn't get exposed against Edmonton.
We had this conversation earlier in the podcast, and so Sky, who played for a long time, I'm interested in your perspective. Why is it so difficult for West teams to cross over and play well and win?
That's a good question. Well, first off, they're fourth, right? So they're not the best team in the West. Obviously, that's one thing. The other thing is always, when you look at this game, I know it's just one day, but Montreal played on Friday in Ottawa. And they come back, and Edmonton's playing on the road Saturday. So that's so they have to travel on that Saturday to go play that game. They come back home, travel across the country. So just preparation and physical preparation wise, Montreal has an extra day and no travel. So that's huge. At this stage of the season, everyone's banged up. Everyone's kind of tired, even though there's a new adrenaline rush with the playoffs coming by. But I think that's part of it. I think Montreal and obviously pretty much every team is more comfortable in their own stadium. But besides that, I don't know.
What was your take from them playing their guys last week? Why did Montreal, you talk about the rest and extra days, shouldn't have been extra days, it should have been extra 8 days. Why do you think that Kahari Jones decided to, other than the obvious reason of wanting to keep his guys sharp, what do you think the deeper thought process was, or the thought process was, in Kahari Jones playing his guys last week?
I think there's a few things. I think the main one is personal experience.
Because I hate it. By the way, do you like it or do you not like it, first of all? Because I can't stand it. I didn't like the decision at all.
I didn't mind it. Honestly, I didn't mind it. Obviously, we're after the fact experts. If Vernon would have got hurt, we would all have said, oh, it's stupid, he shouldn't have played. But, I mean, it's personal experience. Kahari said, and this is what he said about this one when talked to him about it. He said when he played back in the days, he was MVP that year, and they rested him the last game of the season, and he felt rested. He felt rusty when playoffs came around. So I think personal experience wise, he's one of the guys that wants to play every game. And he had that one experience of going to the playoffs rusty, and he has that in the back of his mind every time he prepares. This is his first experience as a head coach to manage these guys. And so that's how we went. The other thing is, you have to remember that Vernon Adams is a young quarterback. Like, he's only had 18 starts in his career. So this guy, and I know, like, at this time of the season, what are you really going to learn? But he's still young. He still has to learn things. He still has to go out and find his rhythm. And I think when he got hit, like, two times on that last series, that's when they decided to pull him out. Was it too late? Was it a bad decision to play them? I don't know. At this point, they're healthy, so it's okay. But it was a big risk to play them in Ottawa. I think they really wanted to keep that momentum going. This team is kind of a rhythm team and a vibe team. They play good because they feel good. They feel confident. They're a comeback team. They're talented, but they're not the most talented team in the league. So they kind of got to keep that groove going, that vibe going. I think with a win to end the season, feeling good, 10-8, that's what they wanted to replicate, and have these guys go out and play good against a bad team, feel good about themselves coming in the playoffs. So I think it was a bunch of stuff that decided to play the guys. And at the end of the day, the guys are healthy. So that's what I think, that's the only thing that counts. But it was a risky business to go out there and play all these starters.
You mentioned Kahari, and he is in his first year as a coach and still technically has that interim tag. What's your appraisal of the job he's done and the likelihood that he'll be back in Montreal as the head coach next year?
Man, I give him an A-plus for this season. Like, this team had no identity, was going nowhere, had no confidence. This is a team who, not far ago, like 2 years ago, lost their 11 last games by a margin of average of 25 points. Last season, they were more than average. Like, I thought when this team came in this season, they had 5 wins last year, and I thought a few of them were lucky at the end of the season. I thought this team was, I didn't think they'd go over 5 wins this year. I thought this team was in shambles, but they got rid of Sherman, who was a big, big problem here in Montreal. Never adapted, never wanted to learn. He was, with all due respect, but he was a dinosaur in this league. So guys started the games, and they already had 4 games in their bodies come game time because they did practice like it was 1975. So it really didn't work. So he brought a new energy. He brought an identity. He's played around Vernon Adams' strength. He's rallied this team, who now believes and plays with confidence, and they want to play for him. So just for all of that, and the fact that they've turned the corner so immensely, I think he did a tremendous job. Now, he should come back, and he needs to come back, because finally this team has an identity and is winning. The problem is, obviously, is this team's for sale. So who's pulling the strings? Who's deciding? Who's controlling the money? We don't know. What we've heard over the past week or so, and when I talked to Patrick Beauvais, the president of the team, he said there were discussions already. But to what extent? And now you got a vacancy in Ottawa. You might have vacancies in other places in the league at some point. You don't want to lose him. He's going to be a hot commodity because he's turned around this franchise. So some teams are going to be interested in his services. You want to lock him up. You want to lock him up for long term. But I don't know who's pulling the strings, to be quite honest. This issue of the sale of this team is kind of weird. We don't know where it's going. We don't know. Randy Abrosi said it's sooner than later, but we've been hearing that since February. So we have no clue where this is going. So your guess is as good as mine at this point. Hopefully they sign him, but we don't know.
Hey, Matt, as a Quebecer, has anybody ever told you that you have a great vocabulary in English for someone whose English is a second language?
No, never before. But no one's ever told you that. Thanks for giving me props on
that. Yeah. As a Quebecer and a Montrealer, what's the vibe in the city now? Playoff time, but also just kind of the vibe around Alouettes fans since this whole thing is kind of emerged with Kahari and with Vernon and just the success of the team over the last little while. Are you starting to feel like, what are some of the signs that you're starting to feel that football is back? Because it was really at a all-time low last year.
It's uber positive, man. It's the vibe in the city around the Alouettes is huge. Obviously, the Montreal Canadiens are kings here in the city, and everything's about the Habs and the Montreal Canadiens and that team. But there's a fight for second place with the Montreal Impact of the MLS and the Alouettes. And I think there's room for everyone, obviously. But there is a fight for that second spot of the most popular team in the city. And I think with this season, what went on with the Alouettes, and the fact that even through the struggles they've had over the past few years, people have showed up to the stadium. Like, even if they've given tickets, and they've admitted to this, given a few thousand tickets a game, people show up. And that there was a certain point where I had season tickets and I tried to give them away and people wouldn't even want them. But this year I've had people every single game asking me for tickets. And this, when you come, if people who've come to a game this year will notice the energy at the stadium is unreal. Honestly, it's like back in the days. And they've put tarps on certain sections with, which I said, there's like the, I don't know how you say this in English, but it was like, it's just humiliating to see these tarps to close sections. And a few years ago, they built, or they improved the stadium to add 5,000 seats. And a few years later, you put tarps on them because you can't fill them. But what it has created is a more intimate experience, and people are jammed together. so that the vibe during the games and the games they play, the comebacks, the down to the wire finishes, has kind of brought back the fandom and the casual fan to the game. The hardcore ones have always been there, but the casual ones want to be there now. And you see, I mean, just for the sale of this game, people are crazy buying tickets, and it's going to be a great game. But you see people proud now wearing an Alouettes hat. You see people proud of talking about the team. Before, all the people would say was like, yeah, your team sucks. And that's all I'd hear for the past 5 years. Yeah, your team's tough, man, it's tough, yeah. But now people talk about the game, talk about the players, talk about this play. And so people have really bought into what they're doing, and they're really appreciating the show that they're putting on game after game. So you can really feel the vibe kind of changed in the past, 5 months around the Alouettes.
Having said all that, what's going to happen? What's your prediction on what we see happen this weekend?
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of people here are saying, oh, it's going to be great, Eastern Final, Montreal, Hamilton, and everyone's seeing this like it's guaranteed to happen. But I really don't see it that way. I think it's going to be a hard-fought battle. I think Edmonton did well in resting its players. I think they're going to come here with a great offensive plan. I think there's something that's going to be to show for. It's going to be the offense. I think Trevor Harris is going to have a good game because I just think he'll be ready. He'll be motivated. His first playoff game with his team. So I think it's going to be a high scoring, and I think it's going to go down to the wire. I just think there's something special, and there's something about this attitude in Montreal that's going to give him a little edge at the end. I think discipline and turnover is going to be key as well in this game. But I think the Alouettes edge it slightly in this game. I don't see a big margin, but it should be a good game.
Well, this is what I want to see. I want to see that buzz to continue to grow throughout the postseason. I want the Owls back in the Grey Cup, potentially winning it, giving Bowman a nice ride into the sunset if he's done. But here's the thing, and unless there is a new ownership group in the next month or so, Randy Ambrosi can't hand the trophy to himself. So what I want to see is the two loved alumni, Davis Sanchez and Matthew Prue, on stage accepting the trophy on behalf of the team. That's what I want to see.
Maybe we could buy this team. You know what? Maybe we could buy this team. Who knows?
I thought for a minute there, the way you were going with your analysis, you were gonna pick Edmonton. I was listening, and I was about to jump in and tell you, no, don't do it. It's not good for your career. It's not good for your life. But thank goodness you jumped off and went with the Owls. I'm with you. I'm not giving predictions yet, but I'm with you. I do feel that it's this is going to be the worst. This is the worst analysis ever, but I feel like there's some destiny with this football team and something special. So forget about the matchups and the X and O's part of it, because if I look at that, I do think that Edmonton is a very talented team for their record. I do feel similar to you. I do feel like this is a special team and a special time for the team in the city. So on that note, Matty, I know you have a busy week. We'll see you. I'll be in there this weekend. So I look forward to being in the stadium and being with yourself and the rest of your crew, the Alouettes fans, and getting back to the city for a playoff game in Montreal this Sunday. That sounds good, doesn't it?
It sounds pretty good, man. It sounds pretty good. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. And, we'll see you in Montreal in a few days, my friend.
On Twitter, he is Matthew Prue, RDS. Thank you for joining us, Matthew Prue.
Remember, in this very feed, we will have a West preview breaking it down. And also, if you want more content specifically about the Owls, we've got in Waggle Extra, my conversation with Kahari Jones. All of these podcasts are brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips. That is the Waggle. I'm Donovan. He is Davis.